All right, so I haven't been up here for a sermon in a long time. The last time would have been during the 2016 summer series when we had a lot of the young guys preach. The prompt I was given for that lesson was, how do our physical families impact our spiritual families? And when I was given that topic, I thought it surpassed my knowledge and experience. And apparently it did, because I haven't been back up since. But I am a different person now than 3 years ago. I've experienced quite a bit since then. Since that time, I've lived in a different state. I've lived in four different homes. I've had three different jobs. Attended four different colleges. I graduated. I was a first-year teacher this year, and as of today, I've been married for a whole year. So, on paper, I'm a full-fledged adult with a lot of experiences under my belt. But I found the old adage to be very true that says, wisdom comes from experience, and experience from a lack of wisdom. So these past few years have been full of challenges and brand new experiences that have been rewarding and happy and successful for the most part, but they were challenging. I can't tell you how many times over the past few years I was overwhelmed with uncertainty and fear, because half the time I don't even know what I'm doing whenever I do things. So, but I always considered myself to be strong in the faith, and that's what kept me going. But throughout these experiences and challenges, I've come to find that when trials arise, my faith often hides away for a bit. And I start asking those questions that we all ask when things get tough. And like, what have I done? What am I going to do now? How am I going to do this? Am I going to make it through? And we all ask questions like that when tough things come up. And it's a shame how quickly we can forget that God is on our side. But I take comfort when I read my Bible, as we all should, because many great stories of faith start with a person asking those questions. So tonight I want to tell a few of those stories. I'm not going to read them. I'm actually going to tell the stories, but I encourage you to follow along and fact check me as I go. So let's go to Judges 4 first. So of course this event in Judges 4, and it is a historical event, occurred during the period of the Judges. So this story, like many of the stories in the Judges, start with a very familiar beginning. And that is, Israel has abandoned God once again, and God has sold them into the hand of the king of Canaan. So for 20 years, this went on. This king sent the commander of his army, Sisera, to abuse and oppress the Israelites. Israel became hopelessly lost and beaten down by Sisera. They had nowhere else to turn, so they finally called out to God. That was their last-ditch effort, was to cry out to God. So God heard them. He had mercy, and he spoke to his prophetess during that time, Deborah. And he told her how he planned to deliver his people. So God had chosen an Israelite man to oppose Sisera on the battlefield. That man was named Barak. He was an Israelite man. So after God spoke to Deborah, she summoned Barak to come and talk to her about the plan that God had put forth. So when Barak arrives to talk to Deborah, she basically says, well, Barak, you know the job that God has given you to do. Go take your army of 10,000 men and defeat Sisera's premier army. So that's a big honor, right, for Barak. God has chosen Barak to be the leader of his army and lead one of the greatest battlefield upsets of all time. So this is a great honor. Barak must have been an incredible man of faith to be bestowed with such an honor. But do you know what Barak was thinking when he got this assignment? He was thinking that there's no way I can do this. He probably began to imagine Sisera's 900 iron chariots lined up against him, and he suddenly lost all of his courage, and he questioned his faith. He wondered, how on earth could the Israelites possibly win? How could he possibly survive this mission? So while Barak's standing there thinking, he finally summons up the courage to reply to Deborah, and he said, I'm only going if you go, Deborah. Otherwise, Barak was out of there. He wasn't going to do it. So Deborah agrees to go with him, but then she tells Barak that he would not find glory in this victory, because glory goes to those who put their faith in the Lord. So, of course, I'm paraphrasing and extrapolating and guessing. This is probably what Barak was thinking, but that's what good storytellers do. So bear with me as I do a little bit of that tonight. But it's not a far reach to assume that Barak immediately felt shame because he realized his faith just turned tail and run off. His God called upon him, and he was weak. He wasn't able to answer immediately. But we know that God uses the weak to his glory. Look at verses 14 through 16 of Judges 4. And Deborah said to Barak, "Up, for this is the day in which the Lord has given Sisera into your hand. Does not the Lord go out before you?" So Barak went down from Mount Tabor with 10,000 men following him. And the Lord routed Sisera and all his chariots and all his army before Barak by the edge of the sword. And Sisera got down from his chariot and fled away on foot. And Barak pursued the chariots and the army to Harosheth to Goyim, and all the army of Sisera fell by the edge of the sword, and not a man was left. Alright, so that's story number one. Now turn a few pages over to Judges 6. So Israel's done it again. They turned from God and began to live wickedly. So Israel was given over to another foreign nation, and that was Midian this time. So Midian oppressed Israel for 7 years. So not 20 years like the story we just read, but 7 full years Midian oppressed Israel. But this abuse was to the point that the Israelites were fleeing into the mountains, and they lived in caves and dens. They did everything in secret. So Israel cried out again because they were out of options. And God showed mercy once again. So God comes up with another plan of deliverance. And he sent an angel this time to speak to an Israelite named Gideon. So when the angel appeared to Gideon, he said, "Behold, the Lord is with you, O mighty man of valor." And Gideon quickly realizes that this is an angel of the Lord. And he wasted no time in assaulting this angel with questions. "Why is all this happening to us? Where's the God who led us out of Egypt? Why has he forsaken us?" And here's the reply in verse 14. The Lord turned to him and said, "Go in this might of yours and save Israel from the hand of Midian. Do not I send you?" And he said to him, "Please, Lord, how can I save Israel? Though my clan is the weakest in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." So Gideon starts this conversation on offense. You know, he starts going after the angel. You know, "Explain why all this is happening to us." And then when the angel tells him he gets to do something about it, he quickly shuts up. So just like Barak, God is giving Gideon an amazing opportunity to make a real difference. Instead of just complaining about how bad things are, he can actually go and do something about it. But Gideon is scared. He's too scared to do that. And I know I can relate to that, and I'm sure many of you can too. As they say, it's easy to talk the talk, but it's hard to walk the walk. And that's what the struggle is here. So you all know the story of Gideon. He struggled with his faith for a little bit, and he asked God to strengthen his faith. And being the merciful and patient God that we serve, he obliged Gideon's request, and after a series of signs, Gideon realizes that he can do this. He can fight because God is with him. So the Midianite army was huge, far larger than the Israelite army, which had been whittled down to only 300 men. So God got a little bit creative here. So look at Judges 7, starting in verse 19. So Gideon and the 100 men who were with him came to the outskirts of the camp at the beginning of the middle watch, when they had just set the watch. And they blew the trumpets and smashed the jars that were in their hands. Then the three companies blew the trumpets and broke the jars. They held in their left hands the torches and in their right hands trumpets to blow. And they cried out, "A sword for the Lord and for Gideon." Every man stood in his place around the camp, and all the army ran. They cried out and fled. When they blew the 300 trumpets, the Lord set every man's sword against his comrade and against all the army. And the men of Israel were called out from Naphtali and from Asher and from all Manasseh, and they pursued Midian. That's story number two. All right, so story three. Few more pages over in your Bible, the Judges 11. The mighty nation of Ammon has made war against Israel. And when Israel discovers this, they do what they do. They freak out. They start asking those questions. What are we going to do? How can this possibly work out? Well, God stirred the hearts of his people and showed them a way of salvation, as he always does. So real quick, a little backstory on one of the characters. There was a man named Jephthah. He was an Israelite, but as a child, he was rejected by his people because Jephthah was born of a prostitute. And for that reason, he was driven from his home at a young age by his brothers because he wasn't good enough to live amongst them just because of who he was born by. So Jephthah fled to the land of Tob, and while he was there, he got caught up with a rough group of guys, we read. And for years, he lived among them. And, well, Jephthah and his band of merry men must have been a tough crowd of warriors, because the Israelites, when they saw Ammon knocking at the door, they went and found Jephthah. They swallowed their pride, and they asked for his help. So Jephthah had no love for his people because of what they did to him when he was younger. But he heard out their proposal. Simply put, the Israelites wanted Jephthah to lead the Lord's army against Ammon. But after hearing their request, Jephthah became indignant with them. He basically asked them, "Why should I help you? What's in it for me?" So this is different than any of the stories I've told so far with Gideon or Barak. When Jephthah's faith is tested, he doesn't get scared or lose his courage, but he instead asks, "Is this fight worth it?" So whenever you face great trials and great faith is required of you, do you ever ask yourself, "Is this really worth it?" Because it would be a lot easier to stay home many days. Well, Jephthah's faith would prevail, of course, otherwise I wouldn't be telling the story. So in Judges 11, starting in verse 29, it says, "Then the Spirit of the Lord was upon Jephthah, and he passed through Gilead and Manasseh, and passed on to Mizpah of Gilead. And from Mizpah of Gilead he passed on to the Ammonites. And Jephthah made a vow to the Lord and said, 'If you will give the Ammonites into my hand, then whatever comes out from the doors of my house to meet me, when I return in peace from the Ammonites, shall be the Lord's, and I will offer it up for a burnt offering.' So Jephthah crossed over to the Ammonites to fight against them, and the Lord gave them into his hand. And he struck them from Aroer to the neighborhood of Minnith, 20 cities, as far as Abel Karmim, with a great blow. So the Ammonites were subdued before the people of Israel." So remember, I'm paraphrasing. I'm not telling the whole story of these guys. A lot of other things happened. And your Bibles go into great detail about them. And they're cool stories. They're amazing stories. And I encourage you to read the whole story. If not for spiritual encouragement and application, at least because they're entertaining. They're cool to read. I've always thought they could take a lot of these stories from Judges and make a cool movie series and make a lot of movies. And they have made a few of them. They weren't successful. But anyways, just be aware that I'm purposely telling a portion of these stories to make a point, and hopefully by the end that point is apparent. But so let's talk about Samson now. So we're still in Judges. Samson has gotten a movie made about him. I saw a preview a couple of years ago. I never went and saw it, though. But he's also had plays made about him. On the way to Branson last summer, there was billboards. Once you got into Missouri, there was all sorts of billboards displaying the Samson play was going. The ticket prices were pretty high. But anyways, I'm going to focus on the middle portion of Samson's story. Samson had a lot of conflict in his life, and he really brought a lot of it on himself, mainly because he married a Philistine woman, first off. And any Israelite knows you don't intermarry, especially with a Philistine. But once again, God doesn't use perfect people to do his will. So you can read the whole story in Judges 13 through 16, but I'm going to jump into chapter 15. So Samson, he's going home to his wife one day, his Philistine wife. When he arrives home, he finds that his father-in-law has decided to give his wife to another man. I can't imagine how angry this would make me. It's not a situation that I can relate to, but I'm sure I'd be very angry. But I don't know that I'd react the way Samson did. But Samson, in his rage, he went out and caught 300 foxes, and then he tied torches to their tails, and then he let them loose in the Philistines' grain fields, and utterly destroyed all of their crops. So it's safe to say that Samson was a bit of a psychopath. But God had commissioned this man's great strength, to fight the Philistines, the enemies of God and his people. So after Samson did the whole thing with the foxes, the Philistines decided to come back after the Israelites. An obvious reaction. So no surprise, the Israelites get scared. They don't know what to do, so they talk it over with Samson. And Samson ends up out on his own, tied up. And the Philistine army is coming toward him, and they find Samson tied up and all alone. So they're probably thinking, all right, we got him. And then suddenly the Spirit of the Lord rushes upon Samson. He breaks out of his bonds, and he picks up the jawbone of a dead donkey, and he beat to death 1,000 Philistines. So God blessed Samson in a lot of ways, a lot of physical ways especially. And he delivered him, if you read Judges 13 through 16, he delivered him time and time again. I mean, he just killed 1,000 Philistines with the jawbone of a donkey, which, not the jawbone of an elephant or a horse or a cool animal, it was the jawbone of a dead donkey. So Samson finishes that job and he lays down because he's obviously exhausted, right? But he begins to worry because his exhaustion was very heavy. He was very thirsty. He began to think that he was going to die of dehydration. So after everything God has carried him through, he was worried that God was going to let him succumb to dehydration. And sometimes our faith is just alarmingly weak. So in Judges 15:18, Samson asked that faith-wavering question that I've been talking about tonight. Shall I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? So God splits open the hollow place that is at Lehi, and water came out from it. And when he drank, his spirit returned, and he revived. Therefore the name of it was called En-Hakkor, is at Lehi to this day, and he judged Israel in the days of the Philistines 20 years. Alright, so I want to talk about one more story tonight, and then I'll get to some application. So Samuel gets a lot of screen time in the Old Testament. He was a great man of faith. And when God called upon him to do a job, to do his will, Samuel often literally said, "Here I am." He was a prophet, he was a priest, and a judge. He was the point man for establishing the monarchy in Israel, which that was a job he did not relish at first. He did not want to do that. But after he did, he grew close to the first king he anointed, who we all know was Saul. So turn to 1 Samuel 15. So the kingship of Saul started off well. And like I said, Samuel grew fond of Saul. They became friends and allies as they led the people of God. But things turned south for Saul and Amalek. God wanted this nation wiped off the face of the earth. They were a wicked and evil people. And God did not mince his words when he sent Samuel to give Saul his marching orders. And that order was clearly stated. And it said, "Go and strike Amalek and devote to destruction all that they have. Do not spare them, but kill both man and woman, child and infant, ox and sheep, camel and donkey." So a clear order. So Saul gathers his army, and he went and he fought the Amalekites, and he did a real number on them. He did quite a bit of damage. But in the end, when he was finished, he decided to bring back the king and the best of the livestock. So this was in direct defiance to God's command. So God told Samuel after that he regretted making Saul the king, and he was going to reject Saul. So Samuel hears this news from God, and he was completely devastated. His friend and ally defied God and turned his back on them. He turned his back on the mission, what they were trying to do. And Samuel, that night, after God told him what he did, he wept. He bitterly wept through the night because he didn't want to go tell Saul, his friend, the awful news. It had taken Samuel a long time to warm up to the idea of a king. And now the king had anointed himself and befriended was to be rejected by God. This was a very hard task for Samuel. Can you imagine delivering such news to one of your friends? But remember that God requires us to do the right thing all the time, no matter how hard it is or how it may affect our friends and family. I mean, there are many of us I know in here who have friends and family who have fallen away, or they just openly reject the faith. And there's many opportunities that arise in which we can do the will of God in front of them. We can do the will of God to them. We can speak truth to them. But do we spare their feelings too often? You ask God, when those opportunities arise, why do I have to do this? I don't know if I'm strong enough to do this. Samuel did the right thing. He got up the next morning after weeping all night and went to Saul. So starting in verse 13, chapter 15. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, "Blessed be you to the Lord. I have performed the commandment of the Lord." And Samuel said, "What then is this bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen that I hear?" Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice the Lord your God, and the rest we have devoted to destruction." Then Samuel said to Saul, "Stop. I will tell you what the Lord has said to me this night." And he said to him, "Speak." And Samuel said, "Though you are little in your own eyes, are you not the head of the tribes of Israel? The Lord anointed you king over Israel, and the Lord sent you on a mission, and said, 'Go, devote to destruction the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they are consumed.' Why then did you not obey the voice of the Lord? Why did you pounce on the spoil and do what was evil in the sight of the Lord?" And Saul said to Samuel, "I have obeyed the voice of the Lord. I have gone on the mission on which the Lord has sent me. I brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and I have devoted the Amalekites to destruction. But the people took the spoil, sheep and oxen, the best of the things, devoted to destruction, to sacrifice to the Lord your God in Gilgal." And Samuel said, "Has the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than to sacrifice, and to listen in the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of divination, and presumption is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Lord, he has also rejected you from being king." Saul said to Samuel, "I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. Now therefore, please pardon my sin and return with me that I may bow before the Lord." And Samuel said to Saul, I will not return with you, for you have rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord has rejected you from being king over Israel." As Samuel turned to go away, Saul seized the skirt of his robe and tore. Samuel said to him, "The Lord has torn the kingdom of Israel from you this day, and has given it to you, to a neighbor of yours, who is better than you. And also the glory of Israel will not lie or have regret, for he is not a man that he should have regret." Then he said, "I have sinned, yet honor me now before the elders of my people and before Israel, and return with me that I may bow before the Lord." So Samuel turned back after Saul, and Saul bowed before the Lord. Then Samuel said, "Bring here to me Agag, the king of the Amalekites." And Agag came to him cheerfully. Agag said, "Surely the bitterness of death is past." And Samuel said, "As your sword has made women childless, so shall your mother be childless among women." And Samuel hacked Agag to pieces before the Lord in Gilgal. And Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house in Gibeah. And Samuel did not see Saul again until the day of his death, but Samuel grieved over Saul. And the Lord regretted that he had made Saul king over Israel. Samuel's faith was tested here. And he not only obeyed the command of the Lord in the end, but he did it in outstanding fashion. He did it completely. There's going to be hard things in your life. And it's all right to grieve through the night as you anticipate them. But when morning comes, like Samuel, you have to get up and you have to do the job completely. So that's all the stories I'm going to tell tonight. And I could go on telling you stories about men of faith all night, because there are so many in our Bibles. We sang before the lesson about the faith of our fathers, and we treasure these stories. We look to them for strength because we live in a world with Philistines and Amalekites on every side of us, people who spit upon the name of Jesus. Persecution is coming. Jesus told us in John 15, "If they persecuted me, you better believe they're going to persecute you too." We can't escape it. If we do, then we fail. But faith's hard. We often don't know what we are doing or how we are going to do it. And it can be scary sometimes, but God knows it and He is faithful. Look at the men we talked about tonight. They didn't start off with great faith. They questioned themselves. They questioned God. They didn't believe that things would work out for them. Turn to Hebrews 11. So Hebrews 11 is the hall of faith, is what we call it. That's the passage in the Bible that it records the stories of great men and women of faith. Obviously, because it's only a chapter, it leaves a lot of great people of faith out. But the writer, he addresses that in verse 32 of Hebrews 11. And that's where I want to start reading. And when I finish reading, we're all going to stand and sing together number 524, when church arrives. So starting in verse 32. And what more shall I say? For time would fail me to tell of Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, of David, and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith conquered kingdoms. They enforced justice, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, quenched the power of fire, escaped the edge of the sword. They were made strong out of weakness, became mighty in war, put foreign armies to flight. Women received back their dead by resurrection. Some were tortured, refusing to accept release, so that they may rise again to a better life. Others suffered mocking and flogging and even chains and imprisonment. They were stoned, they were sawn in two, they were killed with the sword. They went about in skins of sheep and goats, destitute, afflicted, and mistreated, of whom the world was not worthy, wandering about in deserts and mountains, in dens and caves of the earth. And all these, though commended through their faith, did not receive what was promised, since God had provided something better for us. And apart from us, they should not be made perfect. Therefore, since we are surrounded by this great cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. Let's stand.